Welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick Van Zandt. Coming up in this episode, cigars and school supplies.
It is a difficult process. What I do is totally handmade. So if you make any mistakes, so you take different seed varieties, you take different land, you take different positioning of where the tobacco is located, that completely changes the flavor of the tobacco. So from there, you can get thousands of different potential blend combinations. Billionaires, blue-collared workers, musicians, artists, all of these different types of people come to this one place that normally I don't think would ever spend time together.
I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, subscribe, leave us a rating or a review. We really appreciate it. It helps out the show, and we just like hearing from people. Greg, I got your voicemail. I completely agree. That's something we're going to be talking about in upcoming episodes. And a special thanks to Realness for your review on Apple Podcasts. It's really stuff like that that keeps us going. So I have always been fascinated by how things are made and how little changes in that process can completely change something. Our first guest has worked in the cigar industry for more than 20 years here in the United States, in Central America, and has traveled all over the world. He specializes in blending together handmade cigars. This is cigar blender and founder of Foundation Cigars, Nicholas Melillo. So is it hard to make a cigar, or is it hard to make a cigar well?
I would say both. It seems easy when you see the process, but it's very entailed and there's a lot of nuance to it. And it is a difficult process. There's a lot of hands. What I do is totally handmade. So if you make any mistakes, they can cause many problems way down the line.
Is that when you look at like the quality of a cigar? Is it the ingredients going into it? Is it the way it's made?
It starts with really good black tobacco is what we call cigar tobacco. So we call cigar tobacco black dark air cured tobacco, which is very different from, say, what's used in cigarette, which is what we call flue cured, or bright burleys, different types of tobacco. Those tobaccos are cured when they come out of the fields, say within a week's time, where cigar tobacco is naturally fermented over years. So basically what we're doing is controlled composting almost. So we take tobacco in hands in 7,000 pound piles, and just the combination of moisture from the leaf and pressure from the weight of the pile triggers the fermentation process. So quality tobacco, there's a lot to that, and that's the beginning of being able to have time and the resources to age tobacco properly, and having really, you know, grade A top tobacco. That's where it all starts, when having a really good ultra premium cigar. And then the next is the construction and the blend and how it's put together.
So cigar smoke is really different than, you know, cigarette smoke. Is it different than pipe smoke? Like, is it completely its own thing?
It is 100% its own thing. So complete, you can't use cigarette grade tobaccos for cigar, handmade cigars, nor can you use pipe tobaccos for cigars. So they're completely different seed varieties. They're grown in different regions, completely different than handmade cigars. Now, machine made cigars is a whole different thing, but I deal with, again, strictly handmade.
How long will it take you then to make one, right? From not counting when the crop is planted, right? But from like right after we start the process, like how long is it going to take?
So after the tobacco comes from the fields, it goes into fermentation. Let's say that can range depending anywhere from 1 to 3 years, sometimes 4 years. And then it could age in bales for another year. And then it's passed to the production floor. And then after the cigar is rolled, they usually cure, I'm sorry, age in humidors down in where I'm at in Nicaragua for another 90 days before they're shipped. So you're talking 3 years, I would say, on an average.
Wow. And then how long will it
Yeah.
take you to like hand roll them?
So hand rolling, usually a day, we work in pairs in Nicaragua. So every country has maybe a little different style that they use to roll cigars. They work in pairs. So someone bunches what we call the filler leaves, the inside of the cigar, and then a roller puts on the wrapper leaf. And usually a pair can make anywhere from 200 to 400 cigars a day.
Now, does the other stuff around the cigar matter, or is it basically like, look, the tobacco is X percent of it, and the roll itself is like, it just makes it look cool.
The tobacco again is the pillar. If you don't roll them properly, you're going to have a terrible user experience. So if the cigar doesn't draw properly, if it's too loose, it's going to burn too hot, it's going to affect the blend. Construction is crucial in having a good user experience. So over the years, I've seen companies go out of business because they've had major quality control problems that you can't go back to. People are spending, anywhere from $5 to $20, $30 a cigar. People work hard. The last thing you want is when you're relaxing is to light up a cigar that doesn't draw, that doesn't burn, that doesn't taste properly. So the construction and quality control of actually rolling them, that's what I managed for 12 years. I started in Nicaragua in 2003 with one of the smallest cigar factories in Nicaragua, and I left in 2014. We were the largest handmade cigar factory in Nicaragua, so I was overseeing 105,000 handmade cigars a day, and my main role was quality control. Excuse me, quality control was a crucial part of my everyday job.
How did you get started in it? Like, what was the initial kind of draw for you?
So Connecticut, people don't, I'm from Connecticut. People don't realize that Connecticut grows some of the best cigar tobacco in the world north of Hartford, Connecticut. There is a valley called it's usually
Connecticut?
the re Connecticut. So Connecticut's relationship with Cuba pre-1959, Cuba and Connecticut had a very old relationship in, as you know, maybe many places in the United States had cigar factories. Here in Connecticut, there was a ton of cigar factories in the early 1900s. All of the cigars produced here used Cuban filler, so the inside of the cigar, and the outside was Connecticut wrapper. We were really known for the outside leaf, which is a whole different growing process. But Connecticut actually means in Mohawk, Mohegan, I'm sorry, along the Great Tidal River. So the Connecticut River is 406 miles long. It passes through four states. It starts on the border of New Hampshire and Canada. It used to be a gigantic finger lake at the end of the last ice age. It was called Lake Hitchcock. It was gigantic. Eventually, that lake eroded and broke and started funneling into the Long Island Sound. But it left 30,000 acres north of Hartford, this very sandy loam soil that was perfect for growing black, dark air-cured tobacco for cigars. So this goes back to the late 1600s. And before that, of course, the indigenous communities have used tobacco for, we think 5,000 years. So being from Connecticut, I grew up, all my family smoked Connecticut cigars. My great grandfathers smoked cigars out of factories in New Haven, Connecticut. My grandfathers. So when I was 18, I was the cigar guy. I just fell in love with cigars after sharing one with my grandfather. It was an amazing experience to be able to sit down, when you're 18 and have a cigar with your grandfather. It was sort of a coming of age. And I graduated high school and I used to go into this cigar shop called Calabash Shop. And there was lines out the humidor. There was two women that ran that owned the shop. And this one particular day, I get all the way up to the cash register after waiting in the line. And I said, listen, I'd love to work for you guys. I know every cigar in that humidor. I know the whole process. I would love to work for you guys. And I didn't hear from them for 2 months. And a week before I started university, they called me. And that's how I got my start in the industry. So I started running the cigar shop while I was studying international business at university.
Then, like, but starting your own company then, right? Was that like always the goal? Or was that just the opportunity was there and I jumped on it?
So I, you know, I run this cigar shop for all of my 4 years. And I met this crazy guy from New York who was starting a cigar factory in Nicaragua. And we met in 98 and kept in touch over about a 5 year period. I left school and I always just wanted to travel. So I circumnavigated the globe. I went to Italy. I lived in Rome and worked with the Vatican and then bought an around the world ticket and went through India, Southeast Asia. So this gentleman that I had met was on my email list. So I'm traveling all around the world. Going to Nicaragua in the early 2000s wasn't really a thing. So I think he, as he's getting my emails emerging from, you know, Southeast Asia, he said, oh, Nick will probably come live in Nicaragua. So he offered me a job to go work in Nicaragua in March of 2003. So I was traveling around the world for a year. I got back to the States for a month and then moved down to Nicaragua and have been down there the majority of my time over the past 18 years. So I helped this company. And then at one point I said, you know, if I'm working this hard, I should probably start my own company. And it was tough to make that decision.
Is it a profitable business? I mean, obviously it's a profitable business, right? But are we talking like, once you get going, this is easy money, or you got to scrape for everything that you got?
It's definitely not easy, man. We have a very interesting perception because we're selling leisure and relaxation. So there's this outside perception that, oh man, that would be so cool to work with cigars, and oh, that must be the greatest job ever. Behind the scenes, it is a very difficult business, and the money is good, but it takes a lot of money to get started. And a lot of, you know, just think about 3 years of fermentation. You're sitting on money 3 years before. And that distinguishes what makes a really ultra premium cigar and not. You can ferment tobacco much faster. And that's what's happening, is a lot of people they don't have the money to sit on tobacco for 3 years, you know, but they can cure it really fast, get it out in the product, but there's a tremendous difference in flavor. It's almost like my grandmother's pasta sauce. I'm Italian. My family's Italian. It's the difference between popping open a can of sauce, throwing it on the stove, cooking it, and my grandmother, slow heat, 8 hours a day, fresh ingredients, and preserving. Once you start turning that heat up, you start losing a lot of the goodness, the flavor, right, to the elements, right. And once you do it fast, so it's slow and steady, which really preserves the natural oils and flavor. And it's the same with cigar tobacco.
This may be stereotyping a little bit, right, but working in Nicaragua and Honduras in the early 2000s, I would imagine that came with some extra stuff besides just normal business operations.
At first it's really exciting and you don't see the challenge. I was 24 and you're in a new place. You're in a new culture. As time goes on, things get a little bit more challenging, and culture. And I'm in the north of Nicaragua. So I live in a place called Esteli, which is about 2 hours north of the capital. And it's pretty much a farming city town. And if you're a city person, it's a very difficult place to be after a while. But if it wasn't for the Nicaraguan people, I probably wouldn't be there till today. I mean, people welcomed me in and have treated me like a king, and family, and they're very appreciative. You know, the north of Nicaragua, so many people are employed by the cigar industry, so many families from the cigar industry, and it makes a huge difference because there's not many other options when it comes to jobs.
Did you ever have to kind of go around any like criminal elements, or am I being overly dramatic here?
You're being a little overly dramatic,
Okay.
and I
Seen too many
understand why,
movies, right?
and most people do, you know, and I had that perception moving down there. People, it's one of the safest countries in Central America, so I feel safer in Nicaragua than I do in cities here in Connecticut.
What is it about that place? Like, why is that special?
So, you know, Castro confiscates most of the cigar factories in 59, 60, most of the tobacco fields. So many Cuban families flee in the cigar world, which people don't realize. Many of the master blenders and master tobacconists flee Cuba looking for similar climates as certain growing regions in Cuba. Pinar del Rio, there's an area, Vuelta Bajo. These are two very famous growing regions. So Nicaragua has the most active volcanoes in Central America. Okay, the Ring of Fire. Nicaragua actually means in Nahuatl, the local language, the land of lakes and volcanoes. So there's two very large lakes, and the volcanic soil is just so rich. And I mean, you can just drop seeds and things are growing. So in the early 60s, mid 60s, Cubans started bringing Cuban seed to Nicaragua, and they started getting incredible results. The strength, the complexity of the leaf. If you see now with Cigar Aficionado, the top 25 cigars, 16 of the top 25 were from Nicaragua this past year. And most people, you know, don't realize is again that many of the Cuban masters left Cuba. If you're a cigar smoker, you know, a lot of times Cubans are just known because you can't get them.
So, like, okay, when I don't know anything about cigars, and
Yes.
I was born without a sense of smell, so my knowledge is never going to be very good. But, like, what makes, in your opinion, like, what makes a good cigar? What should I be looking for?
So everybody has a different palate. This is the first thing is what's the best cigar in the world? The one you enjoy the most. So we're really, as cigar shops and tobacconists, trying to find the right blend for the right palate. So usually someone that's newer to cigar smoking, tobacco is a powerful plant, a very sacred, powerful plant. So you wouldn't give someone a blend that is very strong, or you know, something that would be can even, you know, rated high in Cigar Aficionado. If that's a stronger blend, usually a newer smoker is not going to enjoy something that's really strong. So you're looking for something milder, you know, really just looking for something that's not jading the palate, that's not bitter, that's not, you know, overly strong. Balance is the key, right? I blend cigars. That's the trick in creating a good cigar is balance. And that takes just years of knowledge and know-how, and learning, you know, how tobaccos work together. But you want to find the right cigar for the right palate. So a lot of times people are just not educated, or they don't get the right advice from maybe a cigar shop, and they're given, or they might get a cigar at a wedding, or they might get one as a gift, and then they leave it in their house. It's not humidified. They smoke it a month later. It's dry. It's, you know, it's disgusting. And then they smoke it and think that's what a cigar is. And that kind of deters a lot of people from smoking cigars. So it's all about finding the right cigar for the right consumer. I hope I answered
No,
your
you
question.
did, right? Like
I think I
it can
skipped.
be kind of all like you have to find what's right for you. Like I drink enough whiskey that like now I know like, okay, I don't like that. I do like this.
There you go.
But at the beginning, it was just kind of like, well, it's all over the place, right?
Yeah. And it's the same thing. Same thing with wine. Our palates are very interesting. It really is the nose which is picking up a lot of the flavor. Our palate has 4 to 6,000 flavor receptors on it, and we're really registering the five major flavors. What is it? Sweet, salty, bitter, savory,
I feel like acid
and
is
I,
in there somewhere.
yeah, acidic. I think you're right.
Yeah,
I
or
can't believe I'm
sour or
forgetting it.
something
I
like that.
sour. That's it. That's it. That's only five, real flavors, really. Your olfactory has millions of receptors. So where are you getting the vanillas, the chocolates? That's actually coming from your olfactory. And that's why people getting COVID, a lot of times they're losing their sense of smell. You're really losing your sense of taste, because if you lose your sense of smell, you're basically losing more than 50% of your taste. So that's really when you get into things, and you see this with coffee or wine. Really developing your olfactory is crucial in really learning tobacco to that kind of next stage. So we don't inhale cigars, but we do something called retrohaling, which is basically where you're taking smoke and you're exhaling through your nose. And that's where you're kind of you're that's when you really start getting into the next kind of level of flavor, understanding cigars.
Oh, I see. So you're like, but you're not, you're like,
Yeah, it's just basically being funneled through the back. It's never going into your lungs. Cigars are not intended to be inhaled into your lungs at all.
do most people smoke cigars the right way?
There's a lot of miseducation, I think, about cigars, and we're really on a mission over the next 5 years is to really train people and consumers, because it does differentiate, have people staying in our industry. We're such a small industry, Nick. Not many people smoke handmade cigars. It's a very small fraction of the population. And I think a lot of times it is because of education that people don't stay in it, because they do have a maybe a negative experience, and they're not being shown properly. They're not being led, first of all, to the right blend, and then they're not really knowledgeable of how to cut it and light it properly, which all affects the blend and the taste of the cigar.
So when you blend a cigar, right? Like, are most cigars blended, or is it basically just one crop of tobacco? Like, how do you blend it?
So there, I use generally for my blends for foundation cigars, I'm using filler. So the inside leaves are generally from Nicaragua. Nicaragua just has such rich, flavorful tobacco. This is why it's becoming more and more well known within the handmade cigar world. So you take different seed varieties. You take different land, you take different positioning of where the tobacco is located. That completely changes the flavor of the tobacco. So from there, you can get thousands of different potential blend combinations. Then you take the leaf that goes around the filler, which is underneath the wrapper, is called the binder. That's holding the filler together. That's usually from different countries. Connecticut, Ecuador grows cigar tobacco, Honduras, the Dominican Republic, Sumatra is known for growing cigar tobacco, Brazil. There's an area called Bahia in Brazil, which is one of the oldest tobacco growing regions. So from all these different options, you can create blends. And all these tobaccos kind of work differently together. And it's really about understanding the different flavor profiles and being able to put those together properly. It's I think the difference of having I'm not the greatest cook, but if you give, certain gr ingredients to me and a real chef, you're going to have two different, very drastically different results. So.
No, you did. I think that the question that I would have, you know, is like, so when you go through a blend, like how many will you try out before, like, okay, this is the right one? Like, how long will it take you to get to that final product for that variety?
For me now, with just the experience that I've had, I've been able to develop my own techniques that I find work for what I'm looking to do. So generally, I'm developing maybe 7 to 10 at the most different blends. And then from those 7 blends, I'm able to maybe make a little tweaks here and there and then get what I'm looking for. So, like the cigar I'm smoking right now is called Olmec. It's our homage to actually Mexican San Andreas tobacco, which is San Andreas is one of the oldest growing regions in the world, also. It actually predates the Cuban seed, but this took me 7 blends. So, 7 blends, and I had the range where I was at, made a little tweak. What's happening before that, though, is what we call I'm smoking what we call tabaquiados, where I'm reviewing bales of tobacco and I'm inspecting bales and rolling little cigars and just smoking the bales to check for flavor. So I'll smoke individual components first, and then I'll end up bringing all those components together, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's kind of like if there was a line of I use whiskey or scotch or whatever, it's kind of like you take a little sip and like, okay, that one's this place and maybe it'll go with that one. Can you pretty much eyeball it? Like, can you look at a tobacco in its refined form or whatever and be like, sweet, sour? Can you look at it?
It depends on if I know who it's coming from and I know who's growing it. The main test for me is the aroma. So the aroma and inspection of the aroma, looking at it, definitely you're getting signs, but you need kind of the three major, the touch, the taste, and the visual is going to give you everything you need. So I would never really just go based on looks, although if a tobacco is green, you're going to know it's not cured properly. If it's too dark, sometimes it can get really black. That means it's been overly fermented. So it's almost like you burn it. So you can tell from that. I can tell a lot from the vein structure. You're also, when you're inspecting leaf for the outside of the cigar, it has to be visually perfect. So wrapper leaf on the outside leaf is much thinner, silkier, and it needs to be perfect color. Can't be any blemishes. It's the most expensive leaf in the blend because it has to be almost perfect. And you're dealing with natural, you're dealing with crops. You're dealing with, a natural product. It's not being put together in a lab, and it's not a widget, which I tell my customers a lot of times. It's a very detailed process.
How different is it? Can it be like, I know these are hard to kind of quantify, right? And my brain thinks in math terms, which isn't really, you know,
Sure.
the best way. But like, how different? Okay, you get this exact crop, same region, same guy growing it, same people working it, same. Like, how different can you expect things to be from year to year?
They can be very different, man. I mean, we're growing right now in the Connecticut River Valley, right? So north of here, about where I'm at, 40 minutes is harvest time. So I'll be up there Friday. Luckily, this year we've had a great year with weather. Last year it was the rainiest Connecticut in 50 years. 20% of the crop made it through.
Oh,
So
God.
20%, and most farmers had to plow under the fields because they get insurance money. Otherwise, there would be no industry up there. This year, the crop is looking great. But you can see a beautiful crop in the fields. It goes then to the curing barns where it needs to go for another 70, 75 days. If you don't know what you're doing in the curing barn or you're not paying attention, that beautiful crop in the field can go to crap overnight if you're not looking at it properly. It's the same thing then when it goes to years in fermentation. Guys would see me in front of fermentation piles, 7,000-pound piles, and oh man, that's the coolest job. It's great. There's nothing more stressful than having tobacco and fermentation because it can be destroyed literally overnight if you're not paying attention. And it can then damage the flavor, and it can completely affect the blends that you're trying to come out with. So there's a lot that goes into it. You got to be on it all the time. Otherwise, it can go bad pretty quick. And then you're out not only money and investment, but then the time you can't get back. So you could be curing tobacco for 2 years. You have all that time and money. If it goes bad and you don't have a backup, then you don't have production.
Mother Nature doesn't give you a second chance, does it?
It doesn't. It doesn't.
Brutal in its honesty, right?
It really is. And that's why our industry, it does seem really simple from the outside, but when you're in it, it's what seems simple is very detail oriented and complex.
Are you ready for some harder slash listener submitted questions?
I would love it.
Best place to smoke a cigar, front porch, bar, or other?
If I had to choose, I would say front porch.
Yeah.
Just for me, again, it depends on what kind of mood you're in, but front porch and a book or some good company, that's the place. I grew up, my father built a little house, we called it. It was one of these prefab sheds.
I know what you're talking about.
He ended up putting a little pellet stove in there, a rug and a table, and that's where my grandfather and my brother and I would have a cigar, and that was heaven. So I tend to lean on the more peaceful, settings and environments. Although a cigar bar could be cool on a Friday night.
What's really better, smoking the cigar or holding the cigar?
Smoking the cigar.
There's some, okay, I will admit to this, and I think one of our listeners called me out on this. I don't smoke cigars, but if I've had some edibles, which I really enjoy edibles, I like the feeling of holding a cigar. There's something
It's
about it
cool.
that makes me feel kind of cool. Like, what do you think it is about it?
That's a good question, man. I never really thought of it at length, but it's like almost something that it's like your companion almost. You don't feel, whereas if you're just alone and you got nothing, you're kind of like, you got nothing, but a cigar is like, oh man, this is cool. It's got a cool kind of perception, and I would say it's like your companion.
There's something just kind of cool about it. This leads into another question though, and maybe this person's not trying to be offensive. I think they're actually asking this question. How can I make sure that I don't look, they use the words douchey, holding a cigar? Because I've noticed looking at people smoking cigars, like some people can look kind of like, ooh, like they're sweaty all the time. That kind of douche look. And some people can look like that person looks sweet.
How do you rate me right now? How am I
Now
doing?
you look like a Cuban general.
Okay.
Like that's a, and that's meant as a compliment, right? Like you look like somebody who is naturally having a good time smoking a cigar, not like kind of the frat boy party cheap cigars.
And I think that's the difference is just your comfortability with it and your confidence in it. If you don't feel comfortable with it, or that comes across very easily.
Yeah, it's kind of like, are you smoking it because you enjoy it? Or are you smoking it
Right.
to look cool? And the ones smoking it to
Because you
look
want to be
cool,
cool.
yeah.
Douchey.
Right. They lose it. You can't lose it. You got to keep it
Douchebagging.
together.
No, I'm just saying that's tough. Like you can't fake that.
Yeah, it's got to be genuine. If it's genuine, you can pull it off. No, okay, so where is the cigar business? Is it up? Is it down? Same as it ever was?
Let me tell you, man, since COVID hit, we've been in a mini boom. So I think people being home allowed them more time to actually learn about cigars and maybe understand them more. And also because now people are working from home. So You're not in an office all day. So where you would have had maybe one cigar at the end of the day or maybe on the weekend, now people, especially in the summertime, you have your computer, you're in your backyard, you're on your porch, you're able to have a cigar while you're working. So it's been really amazing to see the industry strive. I mean, we're not growing in leaps and bounds, but maybe we're up, I think, about 3% this quarter in overall imports of handmade cigars into the United States.
Is there, right? Like, okay, there's the health concern question, right? That either wherever it is in terms of whatever it is, right? But is there a stigma around cigars? Do you feel like you guys are always kind of fighting that?
We've been through some really serious battles with the FDA over the past 2 years, and we luckily have been able to been carved out and not regulated like cigarettes and machine-made cigars. So they've been coming at us. I've been fighting this via our trade organization, Cigar Rights of America, which I encourage any cigar smokers to join. And we've been really working hard in educating Washington that, first of all, kids don't smoke our products. This is not something where, kids have $10, $20 of disposable income to smoke cigars. What has been increasing is machine-made cigars that are being purchased in C-stores, convenience stores, and gas stations. Because of the legalization of cannabis, that market has exploded, and those are generally 99 cent. They're generally homogenized, what we call homogenized tobacco, which was actually developed in Connecticut in 1955. It's basically tobacco dust and paper that's made on these huge machines and rolled out. And those are generally sold in gas stations and convenience stores. To give you an idea of the difference, handmade cigars between Nicaragua, Honduras, and the Dominican, you're probably looking about 320 million units that are imported into the United States, which seems like a lot, but the machine-made market is at about 15 billion units. So 15 billion,
Oh,
say
wow.
300 million. So, and then that's just machine-made cigar. That doesn't include all the other tobacco products, cigarettes, smokeless tobacco. So we are less than a fraction of a percent when you look at the overall pie of tobacco products. So, we've always argued that we are not selling to kids. This is not, you have to be ID'd to go into a cigar shop, and you're not. There are health effects with everything, drinking, with, of course, smoking, but, they're compared to something that's being inhaled into your lungs. It's a complete, the FDA actually released studies that 2 to 3 cigars a week had zero or little health impacts. And, it's, again, it all depends. My grandfather just passed away a couple of years ago, and he was 94. He smoked cigars since World War II. It's not the greatest argument, but we know a lot of people that have smoked cigars. A lot of people argue that it's really a stress relief with cigar smoking. Larry David in Seinfeld had a great piece on cars and comedians getting coffee. He said, "What is it about a cigar that?" And Larry David said, "A cigar is relaxing. It's this. You have time. A cigarette is you need it. You need it. It's a stress. It's a habit. It's something." So when you're smoking a cigar, it is time. It's relaxation, which I think definitely has, good benefits.
Since you brought up a celebrity, we'll go into this one.
Yeah.
Celebrity who knows their stuff.
That's a great question. I mean, as far as cigar smoker, Michael Jordan's a big cigar smoker. Although he's, I think, a big a Cuban fan. I think he's just starting now to a lot of people are starting to discover the world of Nicaraguan cigars. I would say he knows what he's doing. I think Larry David actually knows his cigars pretty well. A friend of mine, D Nice, who was from one of the first hip hop bands, he knows his stuff really well. He's a famous DJ. There's a lot of guys behind the scenes that really, really know their stuff. So guys that really get into it. Joe Rogan right now is really getting into it. I think he's come a long way over the past like 3 years of what he's kind of learning and knowing about cigars.
Is that kind of your experience with people, right? When they get, once they get turned on to them, like they go, it seems like something like people get into.
Yeah, it's because there's a lot to it. And I think once people have a picture of the world, it becomes very, the cigar world, it becomes very interesting. And the process, there's not many processes. You know, this process of handmade cigars is this almost the same that it's been for the past, 200 years. So there's not many industries, I think, that still exist that, existed 200 years ago. And really, when you start getting into it, it is an amazing world to learn about the process. And then just who you meet from the cigar world. Working at a cigar store, you meet people that you wouldn't normally meet or would converge in the same place. And the vehicle is cigars. So I would meet, and still you'd meet billionaires, blue-collared workers, musicians, artists. All of these different types of people come to this one place that normally I don't think would ever spend time together.
Like, is there a price point that is a sweet spot that you would say, like, ooh, you don't have to spend this much, but you need to spend this much? Like, is there a price point where somebody, either with your business or with others, that you'd be like, that's a, you're going to do pretty well right there?
So I would answer that in two parts. I would say between $9 and $15, you can get really amazing cigars. Amazing cigars. Top rated, amazing cigars. You could also get a really good cigar between five. We make a cigar called Charter Oak, which is my homage to Connecticut and the Connecticut cigar world. Charter Oak is the image of actually the symbol of Hartford, Connecticut. And we received the number one best value cigar from Cigar Aficionado. And so you can get a great cigar between five. You're not going to get the depth and complexity that you're going to get in the range between 9 to 15, but what you're getting is really good for the price point. So it would be more of a cigar that you would, maybe if you're cutting the lawn or you're kind of doing things and you don't have the time to really sit down and focus on something, that would kind of be more the cigar, for you. But between $9 and $15, man, you're getting an amazing, some of the best tobaccos in the world. I think a lot of the other price points, a lot of times it's, it is marketing. I'm coming out this November with the most expensive cigar that I've ever come out with, but it's for a special reason. We're doing the 100th year anniversary of King Tut's discovery. This is a replica of a box that was discovered within King Tut's tomb. So I work with a company, a place called Highclere
That's
Castle.
cool, man.
Isn't this cool? We actually had a Yale Egyptologist work on all of the hieroglyphs, so they're legit. So I work with Highclere Castle in England. Highclere Castle is owned by Lord Carnarvon, whose great grandfather discovered King Tut's tomb with Howard Carter. He funded Howard Carter and was an amateur archaeologist. So I make a cigar. It's the only cigar I make for someone else called Highclere Castle. And they tapped me to make a 100th year anniversary of King Tut's cigar in November, because his great grandfather smoked cigars and was smoking cigars when the tomb was discovered. So this is going to be one of my most pricey projects, but there's a lot that goes into it.
How much do you sell for?
Thirty there were
Oh, I thought
$33
you were gonna
a
say like
unit. Yeah.
5,000
Yeah,
bucks.
they
I was like, dang.
yeah. Yeah, no. This is, I mean, again, for everyday smokers, you don't have to be spending a crazy amount of money.
That is one of the questions, right? And I'm sure you knew we were going to get this one. It's like, most expensive cigar you've ever smoked, and was it worth it?
The most expensive one I would say was probably a Cuban from 1945. It was a Partagas that a friend gave me. That would probably be the most expensive cigar. It's really about the experience of having something that old. As far as the blend, a lot of times these older cigars, there's this misconception that always older is better and when it comes to aging cigars, and it's not always the case. And a lot of times is that the tobacco's it's an alive living plant. With that much time, it loses a lot of its cellular structure and a lot of its flavor over time. So it was good, it was very mild, but I don't know if I would, actively, if I had access, purchase, cigars and smoke those cigars if I was in the position to do so, even if I had, money to spend on cigars are that expensive.
How much would that have been then?
That's a good question. It was probably in the $500 range, from $300 to $500 for one cigar.
Man, it's interesting. We interviewed a guy who was a whiskey critic, and then I'm
Yeah.
all combining that interview in my mind with a documentary I watched about whiskey. And all those guys
Yeah.
who are like the master blenders, they're like, we drink stuff that's 6 years old. The older stuff's really not that
It's the
great.
same. You'll find that with cigar, I work with mainly Cubans, and it's the same way. A lot of these tobacco guys, they chew on their cigars, but a lot of that is mystique. A lot of it is the rarity, the supply and demand. That's what really drives up
Right. That's what
the
it's.
price is there's only X amount of boxes. It's the same with the cigar I'm doing, the King Tut cigar. There's only going to be 700 boxes. It's supply and demand a lot of times.
This one might require some thought, man. Movie or TV show in which the person looked coolest holding a cigar.
Oof.
Like, oh, that was a cool
Holy
scene.
Christmas.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what I would say? I would say Gene Hackman, Crimson Tide with
What
Denzel
is the name of that
Washington.
damn movie?
Is it Crimson Tide?
It's
I don't
either,
know. I
I
looked
think
it
it's
up.
Crimson. Oh, crap. Once you try to say it, you like can't say it. Crimson.
I know. Crimson. What does that even mean? I'm terrible.
Reddish, I guess. I always thought it was a movie about
That's right.
somebody getting killed. Crimson.
Have you seen it? It's a
No.
great movie. Oh, it's in a phenomenal movie. Crimson Tide, Gene Hackman.
I know what movie you're talking about. It's submarines and shit.
Correct.
The reason that
There's.
I haven't watched it is because there was a movie called Prince of Tides, which is a romantic comedy that I was like, I'm not watching anything about tide.
Inconceivable!
Right. Oh, yeah.
Inconceivable! There's a great scene at the beginning of the movie before they submerge, and it's Gene Hackman and Denzel Washington as their, I don't know what you call the lookout point, and they're just getting ready to submerge, and he's smoking a cigar and gives Denzel one, and there's this moment of silence, and he said, "You didn't mess it up. You let the silence go." Gene Hackman to Denzel. Most people would want to occupy the space and with chit chat, and you just enjoyed the moment. And they're
That's a good
smoking.
one.
He's smoking a cigar, and he looks badass because he's comfortable. You can tell he's a cigar smoker, and he's cool.
The only one I was thinking of when they mentioned it was in, I can't remember if it's Predator or Commando, but I think it's Predator. Arnold Schwarzenegger
Oh
is
yeah.
just like you can
Yeah.
see he's got it all the time. Like, oh, he had it down.
Arnold's a big cigar smoker. Yeah. He knows his
He
stuff
knows
too.
how to do it right.
But again, it's what you like too. It's like when you know your stuff is what you like. Who's to tell you what you should be enjoying and what you shouldn't be enjoying? I think it gets clicky a lot of times when you go into cigar shops, maybe.
Yeah.
It gets the real hardcore guys, think they kind of know everything, and it's really about, again, what you enjoy.
That's all the questions I got, man. Is there anything else you think people should know, or what's kind of coming up for you? Where can people find you? Where can people get the cigars? All of that kind of stuff.
So www.foundationcigars.com. I think I forgot a W, but you
People,
guys
we'll
know.
figure it out.
Foundationcigars.com. We have a great store locator. We don't sell directly to consumers, so we only sell via cigar shops throughout the country. So you can find on our website a store locator for a shop near you. We're all over Instagram, Foundation Cigars. I am under Nick R. Agua. That's my Instagram
Nice.
handle.
I like it. I like it. I
Nickar
like it.
Agua. We are actually gearing up to open up a brand new office on a 100-acre tobacco farm in the Connecticut River Valley. So it's really going to become the forefront of Foundation Cigars, this connection between Connecticut and Nicaragua. So I hope to embark on educating a lot more people about the history of cigars and tobacco within the Connecticut River Valley, because it's really a national treasure. It's the Napa Valley of Connecticut. And I'm hoping, we're going to get into our new office. It's been a lot of delays here over the past 2 years with supply chain and COVID. So in September, we're looking forward to moving in, and then hopefully next season we'll be able to have people come up and eventually start tours to really educate people about the process. So I'd love to have you up at some time.
Yeah,
You're
man.
ever in the East
I
Coast,
did
yeah.
not know that Connecticut was big into cigars. I would have never known that.
Yeah, most of the guys are farmers, so they really over the past 100 years didn't do a great job marketing. And
Oh, yeah. Too busy
a
working
lot of
to work, right?
too busy working. Yeah, a lot of farmers are not necessarily marketing and inclined to marketing in general. And the state hasn't really done a great job because, of course, tobacco politically, tobacco doesn't have any it's not positive for any politicians to kind of back. So we're kind of taking the lead with some of my friends in the valley and new generations of tobacco growers there to educate the world about the Connecticut River Valley.
I want to thank Nicholas so much for joining us. If you want to connect with him, we have linked to him on our social media sites. We're Profoundly Pointless on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram. And we have also included his information in the episode description. Okay, now let's bring in John Schull and get to the pointless part of the show. If somebody gave you one option for what to do for that day, you can do anything you want. What does John Shaw want to do that day?
Probably go on a binger. Probably go bar hopping.
See, I want to do absolutely nothing. That's my dream.
I can agree with you.
What do you do to relax?
I have to wait till everybody in my house is asleep and I have to put technology away. Like, that's probably more so technology than my entire house being asleep for me to relax. I gotta get away from technology.
Your brain is just always active. If you're using your phone, right, like it's pretty addictive. Or if you're looking at the computer, it's pretty addictive. But to really relax for me, like I've gotta just nothing. I just sit outside on my patio, ripped out of my mind, staring at trees.
So let me ask you this. You kind of bring up a question or a topic that I wonder. I don't do a lot of herbal medicine, so to speak. Do you think you could relax without that?
Not to that level. No, I don't think so. It's more of like, that's the difficulty, I think, but I don't think that it has anything to do necessarily with that particular substance in and of itself. I think, though, whenever you're in some kind of situation and you're doing something that enhances that situation, right? Like, what if you really like to sit on the couch and then you discover video games? Well, now I really like to sit on the couch and play video games. I think anything that you kind of discover like that then becomes a little bit of a crutch. The difficulty is keeping that under control, right? Because I'm up to like 30 milligrams now. And I'm just wondering in my life, like, how long before I'm taking 100?
I mean, you could probably take 100 in a night, right? I mean, if you started early enough, you could probably get to 100.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to, I think that's for me, right? Like, I know that that situation. I love it too much. I like drinking way too much. I love smoking way too much. So I have to just limit myself, like, nope, I do this on Friday and Saturday, and that's it. Because otherwise, I would just wake up in the morning and drink and smoke all day every day. Because I fucking love it.
You're talking to a guy who's killed his liver twice. I get it. Addiction. It's addiction, essentially, right? But when is addiction crossover? Well, I'm getting real philosophical here. Nobody cares. But when does addiction cross over into, like, not being a relaxation technique anymore? Like, it becomes an addiction. Like, I think you have it figured out. A couple times a week, it's fine. But if you're abusing it.
I think it's when you can't control it. If you can't have a good time without it, then you need to step back. But I enjoy just sitting outside. Like, I love sitting outside. That's my favorite thing. If I can enhance that experience through drugs and alcohol, then I enjoy it more. But I still enjoy it without it. What? It's more kind of like, well, wait, why wouldn't I put chocolate sauce on ice cream?
You know what my phrase is of the week?
Well, clearly no.
You're what, supposed to say, what is that,
smoke
John?
Them if you got them?
Not, you know, not the smart
one
ass.
In the pink, two in the stink?
Well, hey, now.
I don't know.
YOLO, man. You just got to.
How is that your phrase of the week? This is starting to piss me off. This is starting to piss me off about society, is that every single thing that we decided 10 years ago or 20 years ago, when you and I were growing up, because we're both in that 35 to 40 age range, when you and I were growing up, all the stuff that we decided was stupid is now suddenly cool again.
I think every generation has their points that they leave behind, right? Like cars or advancements of technology, whatever. But I feel like phrases and sayings are things that are timeless. I mean, YOLO is it's endless. It's timeless, man.
I don't think so. I think cool is timeless and dude is timeless. YOLO, it's been replaced by, I think, full send. All the way up was before that. Like, I'm all the way up. I'm turned up. Like, every generation has a slightly different one. Like, you're reaching back 10 years and trying to make booyah cool again.
Booyah. Man, well, nobody says booyah. At least not around my
nobody
in my circles.
Says YOLO. You're the first person who
no way.
Has said that I've heard in 10 years.
YOLO is a way of life. It's a way of life.
It's a way of life.
Right. You only live once, which is why I had a double bacon cheeseburger today from Wendy's.
I hate that kind of mentality, though, honestly. Like, I hate when people say that life is short. I think that's incredibly misguided. Life's not short. It's the longest thing you're ever going to do. The challenge isn't to make life short. The challenge is, this is a marathon. Like, how do you make sure you're still sprinting at the end?
I agree with you to a certain degree. However, I do feel like the sayings are presented to kind of force you into things. You know, make you feel
it's
like
a marketing tactic.
It is. However, you know, some things in life, you just have to YOLO, you know, you just have to booyah. You just have to get it.
I agree with that. But I don't think the idea that, like, you only live once, life's short. Like, no, it's not. It's the longest thing you're ever going to do.
I mean,
YODO, why not? You only die once.
Listen, we're going down a very philosophical path here. I'm just going to say YOLO, and let's YOLO to some shout outs. How about that?
I actually want to know, do you smoke cigars?
I have. I don't on the regular, probably because I don't search them out. To me, I think I've only had them when I've been quite inebriated. And I just remember every time thinking to myself, how long is this thing going to take?
You're supposed to relax. It is a time investment.
It is.
That other things don't necessarily require.
Yeah, I am not a cigar aficionado by any stretch. I'm the guy that...
I pick my nose so much now, it's ridiculous.
You're wearing your shirt inside out, you're picking your nose. Who are you?
Somebody called me out about being a mouth breather on the internet. And it's absolutely... It's true, I breathe through my mouth.
You sure they weren't
But it's because I don't have a sense of smell, so I breathe through my mouth. Like, why would I ever breathe through my nose? You get way more oxygen in through your mouth. Like, look at this. Look how much oxygen I'm getting. You should breathe through your mouth. That's superior oxygen. Look how much oxygen you just got.
And I got
flowers are looking brighter.
And I got big lungs.
Body's so. Feeling better.
It. Should we take 5 seconds to have everyone do a breathing technique? Now just.
You can't breathe nearly as deeply through your nose. I'm more efficient. Yeah, I look stupid, but I looked stupid before.
I actually can breathe. I think I can. I can breathe pretty deep through my nose. I think. Anyways,
let me try.
Yeah, see, it's good.
Not even close. I'm getting at least 2 to 3 times more oxygen. Now breathe through your mouth.
I mean, of course, there's more volume. It's like, you know, whatever. You should start doing that weird thing you do. Like, you're like.
Oh, that.
Yeah. Nick's been doing that ever since I've known him. And it's like, you got some boogers trapped in your throat? What's up?
Do you know what something I found out that my wife confessed to me the other day is that her and her very close family and friends had talked about the weird sound that I made and like what's his deal? I never knew that anybody has ever had that kind of conversation. Like, what's going on with him about me? Have you ever found out that someone had that kind of conversation about you? Like, what's with John?
No, not that I can. I can think of. No, I'm sure they have. I'm not saying that there hasn't been. I just not that I can recall.
It's a weird. It's an interesting thing to find out that people are legitimately like not just talking shit about you, but like wondering like what's going on with that guy. Like,
what's this guy's deal?
What's this guy's deal?
Why is he wearing right. a shirt okay. inside out?
Big told you because I'm too cheap to buy new shirts I and know. I can just turn it inside out. And it's like having two shirts.
All right, let's give some shout outs, shall we?
Please do.
Shout outs.
All right, Drew Baker.
DB.
Johnny Chaney.
Johnny Boy.
Xavier Payne.
Big Zane.
Ben Munson.
Big Ben. Ben Mo.
Ben Moon. Judith Medvar.
Medivac.
Okay. Rennie Gibbons.
RJ. RG.
Oh, Jesus. Rosinda Balagnase.
Fuck.
DeAndre Smith.
D. Smith. That's an easy one.
Cassie Heinrichs.
Big Cass.
And Nicole Graythorne.
Nikki. Nikki G.
Thorny. I was actually.
Ooh, that's bad. That would be better. Yeah,
you're actually quite terrible at nicknames on the fly. Like as I was reading these, I was like, "Man, Medivac."
Oh, what are you coming up with then?
I mean, Xavier Payne. What did you even call? What was that one? Do you remember?
Well, I would have. In hindsight, I would have gone like Mr. Payne.
Yeah, man, bring the pain. Yeah. You know, Ben Munson. I probably would have gone like the Munsonator. You know, just things like that. No. Anyways. All right.
I knew a guy named. It's difficult when you know somebody with names similar to that, and you're kind of like, you kind of ruined that name for me.
Well, the 10 people that we picked out this week, I hope we made you feel special. All right, a couple of questions here, a couple of
banners.
Are you a puffy Cheetos kind of guy or a crunchy Cheetos kind of guy?
You know what, man, I go back and forth.
It's tough,
it depends. Right? It depends. Now, if they're spicy, I'm going to kind of try to go for the crunchy Cheetos. I like my spice to be crunchy okay. and my cheese to be puffy.
Okay. I'm just curious.
What about this, you?
I'm going to go crunchy all day. I don't like puffy things. I'm not a big puffy fan.
You have a puffy jacket, though. That you were pretty excited that your wife got you at Costco.
I do. Wow. How do you remember that?
Because I can envision you in a puffy jacket and it makes me laugh every fucking time.
It's a warm.
It's looking like the Michelin man.
Fantastic.
Like the guy like just waddling down the street. Just I was a big critic of the puffy jacket until I got a puffy jacket. And now I feel pretty sweet.
Oh yeah. Well, as you should. And you're welcome, by the way, for the idea. Would you rather live in 1969 or 2069?
2069. Purely because of hygienic reasons. It's just got to be cleaner. I would always rather live in the future than the past, because whenever I watch like historical things, all I can think about is like, man, what did those people probably smell like? And look at all those clothes they had to wear, just sweating all the time without air conditioning. I would always rather live farther in the future purely for comfort reasons.
All right. I'm going back to the 60s, so.
Why?
Because there was an originality of life. There was a, you know, it was just, I'm not a big tech guy, right? I'm not saying you are either, but it would have been nice.
I know what you mean.
Put on a record and just chill and just drink one kind of beer and smoke pot, you know, like, and it's, you know, it is.
I do think we have too many choices now. Yeah. Right? Like, just, there's too many. I can't handle all
everyone
these
needs a
just,
trophy.
Oh, here we go. Boy.
All right. Hey, listen. Good news. It's September.
You know, I was waiting. I was going to pretend like I didn't know.
Oh, man.
And see what you did. All right. You ready? Can I do my intro?
Sure.
Now it's time for the outlaw candle connoisseur himself. Candle of the month. Whoops, ride, outlaw candle connoisseur, ride.
Well done. Well done. I'm actually
just made that up.
This is far my favorite candle that I've ever showcased on this program.
Favorite candle ever, or just favorite candle you've showcased?
Showcased. I mean, it's up there. Okay. It's awesome. But it's by Homesick. It's kind of pricey. It's one wick, but it's kind of pricey. It's $40.
Damn, for a one wick candle?
Yeah, so it's a thicker.
What are you doing over there, money bags?
It's a thicker wick, but it is only one wick. But it's Bonfire Nights, and it's awesome. It's not labeled as a tri-layer candle, but starts off kind of mahogany, kind of woody. The middle of it is a little more sweet. I thought maybe they were trying to go with like a s'mores type of smell, and then it finishes up with like a very crisp, you know, oak wood type of smell. It's awesome. Check it out, Bonfire Nights, homesick.com. It is kind of pricey, but you know, it'll burn like for 40 to 60 hours, which, you know, if you do the burn time per how much that is per like minute, you're actually getting a quite a good deal. So
it's a dollar an hour.
and it's worth it. It's worth every dollar.
I was wondering what you were going to do with Candle of the Month, because, right, like, we're coming out of summer, but we're going into fall. Like, was it going to be a summer candle? Because it would be too early to have the fall scents.
Yeah, so.
But I think that's a good selection. You really balanced it. That's why you're the
outlaw candle. Outlaw candle connoisseur.
How much? What's the most expensive single candle you've ever bought?
I mean,
that's a $40 candle.
I mean, you've asked me this. I think you actually asked me how much have I spent in total.
Right.
I mean, there's a couple of three wick candles that have been over 50 before. But you know, this one's a little different. I guess I'd never bought anything from Homesick before. This was recommended to me by somebody actually that I know, another candle connoisseur. And
man or woman, real quick.
A woman, actually.
Yeah. There are a lot of male candle connoisseurs.
You know,
recommendation.
If anyone remembers me on this podcast for anything, just remember my love of candles.
I don't know how anyone could forget.
Do you think people
that's what should be on your tombstone? The man loved candles.
Do you think people like look forward to the turn of the month episode just to hear what my candle of the month is?
Unclear. I mean, people do comment about the candle of the month, and I would say that you know a lot about candles. You probably know more about candles than anything else in your life.
No, that's not true.
What do you know more about than candles?
There's women.
Like, people would come to you. People would come to you, like, what should I do? What should I get here, John?
I mean,
like, nobody's asking you about taxes or car repair.
I mean, I'm not.
Or home insurance.
I'm not going to debate you on that. I think you're correct, but I also, I mean, I know a lot about sports. I know a lot about certain sports.
It's easy to do when you're a bandwagon fan who changes teams in sports every 5 minutes. Listen, you know, it's pretty easy to have.
Like Tom Brady said a week or so ago, you know, I'm 45. Shit happens, you know? And not one reporter or journalist in that room said a damn thing to him when he said that.
You can't, because that's absolutely true. Like, for people who are younger, and look, I was this person too that was like hearing older people than me at that age saying like, God, life gets, no, man, life gets fucking busy.
Yeah.
Like at 35, once you have kids, you have a job because you're kind of more in a management role potentially at that point in your life, and your parents are getting older and you got to take care of them. Like, life gets fucking busy. It gets hard. Between like 35 to 45, I would say, is probably the most time-demanding, stressful time of most people's lives.
And that's really essentially probably when you're at your best. You know, you might have a little bit of money because you've been working for a while. Physically, you know, you're probably there at the end, or at least feeling pretty good. And here all you do is fucking worry the entire 10 years. And then you come out and you're decrepit and hurting and it's terrible.
Well, you're also transitioning at a point of your life where you're not a young person anymore. And you're kind of preparing for the rest of your life. It's hard. 35 to 45 is, that's a tough time. And like, for people who are younger, and I was this person too, like I said, like, whatever, man. Like, no, it gets tough.
Well, good thing
right
we,
around that age.
Good thing we
like,
YOLO.
That's when life starts. Go ahead and say it again, because I interrupted you a little bit, and I know you want to say it.
Good thing we YOLO. You know, well, I doing this podcast with you now for like 4 years, I have a deeper appreciation for actors and voice actors and things. I'm sure I sound like a goofball and probably don't enunciate a lot of my words correctly. I can't imagine doing it like, you know, for a movie or something and having to get the notes right and, you know, bring across a certain, you know, deflection or dialection. It must just be terrible. Stressful as all hell.
And then there's the fact that it's essentially just me and you, and we've been friends for a long time. Like, imagine doing that in front of, I don't know how many people, 500 people at the same time. Like, that's got to be, and everybody's like, all this depends on you, man.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Right, we're all waiting on you. Okay, are you ready for our top five?
Top five. I did want to talk about one thing real fast.
Okay, all right.
It's space related.
Oh, here we go.
What do you think about the Artemis 1 moon rocket that was scrubbed because of leaky engines?
Two things. One, never heard about it. Two, probably a good thing to go ahead and scrub that for a reason.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, like,
I mean, I
don't know anything about rocket science. What do you want me to say? Well, no, you know what? They really should have checked the blast capacitors on that. And I can't believe that the NASA tech engineer and mechanical engineering didn't pick up on the fact that the fluid dynamics weren't going to be right.
First off, you sounded really educated there. Secondly, I was talking more about the fact of, you know, NASA, we're going back to the moon. You know, here we go, blah, blah, blah.
Space. Oh, is that what we were doing?
Yeah, we were. It was an unmanned mission, but like kind of like a test run. For hopefully in 2025 to get back to the moon.
That's what's amazing to me, is that in 2025, we will again have reached the level of technology that we did when we first got there.
Yeah.
In 1960, whatever.
So I found it fascinating, and we don't have to talk about this a whole lot, but I found it fascinating. A lot of the conspiracy and Reddit, you know, dweebs were talking about. So you're basically, NASA basically admitted the fact that the landing in 69 was fake.
No, they didn't.
I don't agree with them, but it does raise some questions as to why they could successfully do it back then, and we haven't even thought about it in, what, 60 years?
Okay, so as a former reporter who used to cover NASA and go out to the Kennedy Space Station Center, all that kind of stuff, I can actually tell you the answer.
Right.
It's because if you look at the space race back in the 1960s when we were doing that, and the percentage of our budget, the national budget that went towards that, that's why. We essentially were investing a huge amount of our resources into that technology and a huge amount of our interest into it. It was basically for our national pride and for our national defense to get there before Russia did. We don't do that anymore. So it's kind of like, how come you can't lift as much? Like, you can lift a lot more weight when you put 50% of effort into it as opposed to when you put 5. That's really the reason.
Hmm.
You want to hear my conspiracy theory rant?
I think we all do. You never go on rants, so go ahead.
Okay, here's my conspiracy theory rant. The reason that I don't believe in any conspiracy theories is because of logistics. Anybody who has ever been a project manager or tried to organize more than three people knows that there's no possible way that any conspiracy theories could exist. Because think about what it would take to fake the moon landing. You've got to rent out a studio. Well, there's a paper trail for that. How many people know about that? How many people are involved in the process of filming it, of acting it? And over all of these years, it's never come out. Like, there's got to be a line. This is the government. We're talking about a budget. So somewhere there has to be a line item. Like, hey, what's this charge for renting out this studio on Fifth Street? What is that? Like, there's all of these questions that were going to be involved. And just logistically, you can't do that. There's too many people involved. There's too many questions. For any kind of conspiracy theory, name it and logistics will rip it apart. Like, how are you going to do that?
I think you should just drop the mic and I'll see you next year.
Okay. Right. Like, if you've ever been a project manager, it's not possible. These things can't come together.
Yeah. I mean, once again, I agree with you. I can't really play the devil's
advocate. Except for Jeffrey Epstein. I believe that shit.
I can't really play the devil's advocate on this because I agree with you. There is enough of evidence-wise and enough people involved that at some point in the last 60 years, something like hard actual proof would have came out, like a receipt.
Right.
Or you know, or somebody would have came out, you know, and as far as I know, there hasn't actually been somebody that's come out that's been credible that said, hey.
Nobody's ever said anything.
Like, I'm the camera guy who, you know, who filmed them in the studio in L.A. or something.
Right. Like, and who designed the moon? You got to get set designers in there. You got to get people like, what's this receipt for bringing in all these rocks? And, why do we have an artist suddenly coming in? Like, where it just no.
Well, and
all those things, like, think of how complicated anything that you do is.
Well,
how many people are involved? It just doesn't happen.
Once again, you and I working in television. I mean, imagine the lighting it would take, and you'd have to have all those people. They're probably union. So then now you get
right.
The union involved.
Stuff.
Yeah. So I agree with you. It's it's a very good point you brought up. So.
All right. Well, you ready for our top five finally?
I am, man. Let's go to school.
All right. So our top five is top five school supplies. What's your number five?
You got to have a good pencil case.
A pencil case?
Yeah. Well, pen or pencil case, but you got to have a good pencil case, man. Like, you didn't roll with one of those when you were in like elementary school?
No.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would have like sports teams. So I had a few.
Are
of
you
them.
Talking about a lunchbox?
No. That's coming up. I'm talking about a pencil case, something that I would just have just to store my pens and pencils.
My number five is whiteout, because that's when you're getting to the big leagues at school. You got chemicals. You're getting trusted with chemicals. You're getting whiteout. The little kids don't have whiteout. You're going into the permanent. You're doing stuff that's permanent.
It's fine. I'm not going to hate on it. It's not in my top five, but.
Okay, what's your number four?
You're really going to hate this one. Probably if you hated that one, a trapper keeper.
I thought about putting Trapper Keeper as number one, ultimately left it off my list, but I could have gone Trapper Keeper as number one because it sets the stage for all of the rest of the school supplies.
Yeah, not to mention, once again, you're going to find a theme on my list, which is customizability. So,
oh, yeah.
You could get them in different colors, different shapes, different teams.
My parents were too cheap. Oh. They were like, you're getting the red one. You can have a choice, red or blue. You're not getting like this one. But mom, like this one's got superheroes on it. That's 98 cents. And this one's 49.
Oh, man. What's your number four?
Pen. Just a pen. I like pens.
Okay. My number three is a good glue stick.
Now, do you have the glue bottle above?
No.
You have glue stick. You're going straight glue stick.
Yeah, you're just going like the old school Elmer glue. You know, you twist it at the bottom and that's what it is.
I don't know what was more advanced, though. The glue stick, like, was the glue stick for the kindergartners or was the glue for the kindergartners? And then you worked your way up to the glue stick.
No, I think the glue stick was for the kids, and the actual glue was for the slightly older kids.
Hmm. Yeah, because they probably eat the glue. Did you ever eat the glue? Who was the kid who ate the glue in your class?
Of course I did.
Yeah, you were the kid who ate the glue.
I mean, I never turned down a challenge.
That is actually perfectly. That is if anyone is ever wondering what John is like, there are two things that can tell you exactly who John is. Samwell Tarly from Game of Thrones and the kid who ate glue in the glue in your class.
You're still going to stick with Samwell Tarly, huh? I'm never going to live that one down.
Never going to live that one down. I'm not entirely convinced you're not. I'm not entirely convinced you're not that actor.
Trust me. I know I'm not because I would have a lot more money.
There's a conspiracy theory right there for you.
Maybe I am. Maybe you're a reincarnation of Napoleon. Who knows?
Oh, here we go. I thought a lot about my number three. My number three is a scientific calculator because you could play games on it. And that was like the fanciest school supply you were ever going to get. That was the one that, like, when you got home, mom was like, where's the scientific calculator?
I also love that you and I's lists are from, like, the, you know, late 80s, early 90s.
Right.
As we're kids of today, it's, you know, their phones, iPads, tablets. You're talking about playing what do you play on your calculator? Snake?
Yeah, and then you did that thing where you would, like, you could put in certain numbers, and then if you turn it upside down, it would, like, spell out boobs.
Yeah. 4004
and hell.
Yeah,
like
4-3 1-1. I think.
I can't believe you remember that.
Yeah, I do it at home all the time on my personal calculator.
I still don't know what sin, cos, and tan mean.
Cosine.
Yeah, but what does that mean?
I fuck if I know. I don't have a math degree. Anyways, yeah. My number two, lunchbox.
That's interesting. Oh, I didn't cut you off. I'll start it over again.
Right,
but
right.
That's like really tells you about what, like, people don't even know what the math, like, it was so complicated that they're just like, fuck it, just put a button there. Like, nobody's ever going to figure this out.
Yeah, I mean, what do you even use those, those functions for? I probably sound really stupid saying that.
I have no idea.
But, there's somebody out there that's like, well, that's how you find, you know, the square root of 59 or whatever. Like, I don't fucking know. I don't even think 59 has a square root, but it doesn't matter. Yeah, I agree with you. I have no idea.
Okay, what's your number two?
You got to have a good lunchbox.
I was a brown paper bag kid.
Sometimes I was a school lunch kid, but the latchkey lunches, we called them, which was, God knows where they came from, but you know, it was like the, when you didn't have money for lunch or something. So they would give you like an 8-day-old apple and a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in a brown paper bag.
You know, the lunch at my kid's school, like we have a choice between buying in the school. It's $9
a day.
No, a day.
Holy like, shit.
Here's a piece of bread and a piece of cheese in the middle. On your way, son.
I mean, for $9, they better be getting a gourmet lunch for that.
I would go there. Like, you better allow parents to come in and eat for $9. Get the fuck out of here with that.
Yeah, that's
brown bag, baby. I never got a lunchbox.
Yeah, that's insane. I had a lunchbox until it got broken, but it's fine. What's your number two?
How'd your lunchbox get broken? Did you hit a kid with it?
No, it was stepped on by another kid.
Did he do it on purpose?
What was that?
Did he do it on purpose?
Yeah, of course he did.
What was on the lunchbox? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was Hulk Hogan, actually.
Was it because of you or because he didn't like Hulk Hogan?
Probably because I was taunting him.
Oh, well, then you deserved it. I don't feel bad for you.
Well, you know what? I bought the same lunchbox, and it's in a safe place now, so.
Wait a minute. You still have a lunchbox?
I have that lunchbox, yes. It's a highly sought after collectible
item.
No,
it's not.
It is.
No, it isn't. How much is it worth?
Probably $200.
Okay, let's not talk about it like it's a Ferrari or a Shelby Cobra from the 1960s.
It is. Right? It's my Ferrari. Okay, you eat your vitamins, you say your prayers, little boys and girls, and you can be like Hulk Hogan.
Well, and take massive amounts of steroids. Don't forget about that little part that they left out. My number two is crayons.
Okay. I mean, I don't have any color stuff on my list. Actually, my number one, you're going to be really disappointed in. We'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, I don't have crayons, markers, colored pencils, highlighters. Don't have any of that stuff on my list.
Okay. What's your number one?
A mechanical pencil.
I mean, it's cooler than a pencil, but it's not fancy.
I mean, that was my thing in at the end of elementary school, junior high, like that was it for me. I remember going to school shopping because that was still a thing. I don't even know if kids still do it nowadays. I would get like the 40 count, and like I would just stash them. That way, when one ran out, like, and I would, you know, remember how they would give you like the cool little refills of ink? No. Nope. Well, you would get like these
graphite, I believe, is what it's called. A pencil does not use ink.
Yeah, whatever. You would get like the little rectangle cases that were like hard plastic. I used to feel so cool walking around with my mechanical pencil and stuff.
Did you put it behind your ear?
No, but it kind of led to a crazy obsession because. Now I literally have to order a certain kind of pen for every aspect of my life, and it's the only kind of writing utensil I use.
Wait a minute. Do you use different pens for different things?
No. It's just, I use the same pen for everything, whether it's if I'm at work, if I'm signing a document, if I'm playing a nerd game, and I need something to write with, you know? It's the same kind of pen. Same exact
pen. I understand. I understand it. What kind of pen is it?
It's a G2.
Who makes it? I don't know what that means.
I believe.
Give me the price.
Well, so I think it's three. Well, it's going to depend where you go, but it's $3.99 at Meijer for a four pack.
That's not bad. It's a nice pen, but not crazy. It's not like the Bic where you get 10 in a box. You get like four pack or something like that. It's like a Pilot.
Well, that's who makes them, Pilot.
I know what you're talking about. That's a good pen.
They're great pens. Best pens ever. Actually, if you want to sponsor us, Pilot, because I know you're an entity and listening, let me know, please. Thank you.
Pens and Pilot. Pens and candles.
Pens, candles, and Captain J's. No, not Captain J's. Oh, my God. Long John Silver's. There we go.
Long John Silver's. My number one is a notebook because it dictated everything else about school, and you could get – when you got older, you could get like different colors for every subject.
Yeah, I mean, so I have file folders on my honorable mention. That's what I used. Like, yeah, folders, you know, different colors. If they had the tabs, it was kind of cool to like create your own, you know, your own stuff.
File folders are the younger version of the notebook where you got different colors for different classes and different things.
Yeah, those were...
You graduated up to notebooks where you then got different colors.
Oh, well, great.
What kind of monster would have five college classes and get five of the same colored notebooks?
You.
A psychopath. No, you get all different colors. I wouldn't repeat colors at all. I would go to multiple stores to ensure that I had a different color for every single class.
Now, if we're talking about, you know, school items for high school and above, my number one would be a planner, by far, a day planner. But obviously, I kind of broadened it up a little bit.
Okay. What's in your honorable mention?
You know, I don't, I mean, I kind of mentioned like file folders. You also have to have like a good eraser just in case. Like you can have the big pink ones that look like a tongue, or you can have, you know, or, it doesn't matter, but you have to have a good eraser. And then I
always hated the ones that you put on top of pencils. Like that was stupid to me.
Yeah, those were.
Give me a real eraser.
Yeah, you need like a magic eraser. I think is that they're called. Those are quality.
Yeah, that's true. The individual eraser, not the crap on the like the pen, like the cap.
Some
kind of idiot.
And then I just have highlighters as well.
You know, the only ones we kind of left out that I would include are scissors. Scissors was a big deal when you got like you graduated and like, ooh, you got to get scissors now.
I went my school. You weren't allowed to have scissors.
Oh, well, it is Detroit.
Well, yeah, you weren't allowed to have any sharp. I mean, I think that's everywhere. You're not supposed to bring sharp objects as a kid to a classroom.
No, they have scissors for places where you don't get shot every 5 minutes.
Well, whatever. Anything else on your
own? Here's my only other question. When you wore a backpack, did you go one shoulder or two?
One shoulder. I still do one shoulder because I wear a backpack to work every day.
But it's supposed to be a two-shoulder backpack. You're not wearing like a satchel or something.
Yeah, but it's once again, it's something that I did when I was younger, and I continue it to this day.
See, I've always been a two-shoulder person because it's more efficient.
And I think if people were to see you and I, they would be able to tell that without even knowing that you are a two-arm backpack kind of guy, and I'm a one-arm.
I would agree. That's really the only difference between us. Sums up our differences. Well, because I like pens too.
And 6 inches everywhere.
It's kind of good. I'll give you that one. I was trying to think of a way to like, but you pushed me out of the comeback when you said everywhere. And then I had, because I was going to go there, but then you covered all your bases. You sunk my battleship. Okay, that's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, leave us a rating or a review, comment on whatever app you're listening to or on social media. We love to hear from people. It really helps out the show and keeps us going. So if there's a school supply that you think that we overlooked or that we included and you think that absolutely should not be on there, let us know.